We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Klay Thompson, by the way, talking to the media a little bit today ahead of this game against the Pacers, and was asked about the all-defensive team and whether or not he wants to see his name on it.
Yeah, it's always been a goal of mine.
By myself, I'm playing both sides of the ball. That'd be awesome to make all-defensive team before it's all said and done.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that this guy hasn't been on an all-defensive team is really something else. It's nonsensical when you look at the success that this team has had, the role that he has played as, hi, I'm the guy who takes the leading score on the other team almost every single night. And Klay, he basically just used, look at the last 5 years of evidence that speaks to, well, somebody around here has got to be playing a little bit of D.
I mean, I'm not a steals guy, but we have to have some great defenders on this team. I mean, we've been in first place for four out of five freaking years. So at the end of the day, we got to have some great defenders. It's not just all offense with this team. We got some great guys to play that side of the ball.
In other words, somebody is doing it around here, and it's not just Draymond Green. I love those quotes from Klay today at Shoot Around. 888-957-9570 is the number. More of your calls certainly welcome, but no one more welcome right now than our pal Jim Barnett, who, of course, is a longtime Warriors color commentator. Jim is sponsored by Midbay Ford. You can check them out at midbayford.com and find out just how much they're ready to deal. Jim, thank you very much for joining us. How are you today? Have you been watching the tournament this morning?
I was not watching the tournament. I was keeping track of stuff, but I was listening to your show, so... You know, I almost called in and would give my 2 cents worth on Gretzky and Ishiro.
Thank you. Well, please, you're calling in right now. What are your 2 cents?
No, I really like all the topics like that. There's so, and I agree with you. I'd have to look at all the lists because inevitably I'm going to forget somebody. But I love that you brought up Roberto Clemente. I'll just say that. I saw him play many, many times when the Dodgers first came out and played in the Los Angeles Coliseum. And number 21 was in right field, and he had one shotgun of an arm, I'm telling you right now. I love what he used to do, a single, a one-bounce or two-bounce hit into right field, and he would go down, and he would pretend like it went between his legs. And so he'd start running towards the fence in right field, and the man would round first base, and he thought he's going to go all the way to third, and Roberto Clemente would throw a line drive throw that only got about 6 feet off the ground on the fly to the third baseman. They tag him out. The guy was thought he was going to have a triple,
setting dudes up like when someone pulls out the chair from a guy backing down in the post.
Yeah, exactly.
Jim Barnett here on 95.7 The Game. Hey, even though they dumped one game in San Antonio, I thought that's maybe the best road trip of the year. That was just a game where neither Klay nor Curry could find the net, but I like the way the bench played. I like the defensive effort. Tip of the cap to San Antonio. Still a good outfit. The rest of the games on this road trip might have been some of the best overall basketball this team has played so far this year, and it feels like they're starting to take everything a touch more seriously, and now's the time of the year to do that.
Yeah, I feel the same way, and I could feel that just in the locker room and in the warm-ups and in the faces of the players on the road. And you're exactly right. If they'd shot the ball better, there's, you know, I'm not making excuses because San Antonio, Greg Popovich is a terrific coach, and they're a scary team for anybody to play in the first round. But, you know, in that game, I think it was 10 of, 27 from three for Curry and Thompson. I remember this, as Bob mentioned it, 14 of 43 from the field. And then, of course, they came back in Minnesota and lit it up. And Curry, you know, had another 22-point quarter, I guess it was, in the third quarter. He's electrifying. But the defense, I thought, was the main thing. They played defense when they had to against Houston. Against OKC, they held OKC to, I believe it was 88 points and 32%. Lows for the season, and so they seem to be coming, you know, together at the right time. But defense is the key. They've got to maintain that. And, you know, they're a half game ahead of Denver for the number one seed. And I just think it's nice to have an ace in the hole that if you go to a seven-game series, if you have the home court advantage, it's very, very big. Because two things. Number one, you're going to have the first two games at home get you off to a good start there, and then you're going to, if it does go to seven, you've got that last one there. So, but I'll tell you what, I will say this. You have no idea who you're going to play, whether you're one or two. Let's just say that the Warriors in Denver end of the season 1-2, and it doesn't matter which way it is, 2-1, whatever. You have no idea who you're going to play because 6, 7, and 8, San Antonio, Clippers, Oklahoma City, they're all 42-30. Utah's 42-29. It's going to switch and go different ways. And so you might get a tougher matchup if you finish with in the first round anyway. If you finish with number one, maybe you're going to meet at number eight, a team you really don't want to meet, you know, and maybe you have a little more trouble with. So, but, you know, you have to play it out like that. And I like the way they're playing right now. And I'm sorry to hear about Kevin Durant's friend that you mentioned just a few moments ago, by the way, Damon.
Yeah, very, very sad. And you know, sometimes guys, you know, dedicate a game to a memory. I don't know if this galvanizes, unfocuses, refocuses. Kevin, I don't know how to play. It's just, you know, we'll see tonight. But it's an emotional burden without a doubt.
Yes, and it's part of life that we all go through. It's a tragic part of life that some people go through, and some people never have to go through the loss of just when you talk about gunfire and loss by guns and stuff, it's pretty sickening.
Yeah, it is, and frankly, I feel lucky to cover a team where so many guys have been so outspoken against gun laws as they currently stand. I do want to ask you, though, you mentioned the defense there, JB, and obviously, you know, the Warriors' focus, intensity, all these sorts of buzzwords that we hear a lot about, a lot of that, I think, can be captured somewhat by watching how they play defense, because it's the most effort-based part of the game, and usually when they're really locked in as a team, they're really locked in on the defensive end. So my question to you is, we see it happen for four games on the road. The schedule does kind of let up a little bit over these last 12. How important is it in your mind that they maintain that level through this last 12 games, whether it's the one seed or not, but just so that they've had a nice stretch of sustained focus heading into the postseason?
This team is a mystery to me, okay? You know, they finished last year very poorly, and then all of a sudden in the playoffs they caught fire. So I'm happy when they do it, but I'm not going to bet the bank on it for the next 12 games that they're going to play the same way, that they're not going to go back to bad habits. So, you know, if just one or two people are off and not on the same page, but I do think the defense electrifies their offense. And when that happens, it's kind of contagious. And maybe it's even subconscious that all of a sudden they're going and they feel in the groove like that. But we also know they've gone to the finals four straight years, and it's an 82-game schedule. And so it wouldn't surprise me if somewhere down the line here, they're going to have a couple of games where you start questioning it again. Of course, that's what everybody writes, and that's why they have radio shows to question everything that goes on. They've got seven home games, five away games. They've got, if you really want to look at it, I hate to say this, it's a pretty easy schedule at home, because you've got Denver, you've got the Clippers, I believe, and you've got, you know, Detroit, but you've got Dallas, Charlotte, Cleveland. On the road, you got to go to Memphis twice, by the way. We go back to Memphis next week, and then Minnesota again, a week from Friday, I believe it is. And you got New Orleans on the road. So it got Memphis, I think, two times, if I didn't say that already. But it's hard to – I can't – you know what? And I bet you if you ask Steve Kerr, you're going to hope and you think and you like what they're doing right here, but it kind of can go from game to game or week to week with this club. I do like this, that they're playing together. You know, in Minnesota the other night, 39 assists, and Durant had 9 assists. You know, not worried about his scoring average and everything like that. I can't remember when he scored less than 20 points. He had 17 in that game. But, you know, there's one thing you have, one thing I can count on, and that I think Curry's going to be consistent shooting the rest of the year. He's gone through a little slump there where about a dozen games he shot 33% cumulative. And in Minnesota, the way he runs around that floor, you know, and I'm talking to Bob and Tim about it, no one does what he does, and no one's ever done it, where he is, you know, the way he's getting his shots. And, of course, he can do it off the dribble. The other night he was doing it away from the ball without the ball. And he's amazing. I mean, I see him do this at Oklahoma City. I see him do it at Houston. He runs down the middle of the court, gives the ball. Maybe he has the ball, but he gives it up. And then he runs either to the left corner or the right corner. And by that time, the ball swings, and it's usually Draymond on the outreach out there. He then shovels it to Curry, who is still running to the baseline with his back to the basket. And in one motion, he catches the ball, plants behind the three-point line, turns 180 degrees, and in less than a tenth of a second, the ball's out of his hand. Most people would shoot an air ball with that. And it is the most amazing thing I've ever seen, how anyone can shoot that catch, collect, get balanced, turn, and release in that amount of time and hit the bottom of the net.
It is amazing. And you know, I think what's amazing about Steph Curry too, Jim, is the fact that Klay Thompson's jump shot is basically a picture-perfect jump shot on a constant repeat.
Yeah.
There is no sort of, all right, well, on this shot, it was this way. Curry's got like four different arm angles. He can get his shot off by his ear, over his shoulder, from his hip, it would seem. It's ridiculous.
It really is. And there's no one like him. There's never been anyone like him. And I put up on Twitter today a little video of a five-year-old in Minnesota who's dribbling two basketballs. He goes between his legs, the cutest little kid. And, you know, this is a Curry effect. This is, you're seeing more and more young kids. We've all seen videos going behind the back, between the legs, all these things that, you know, maybe Pistol Pete Maravich did a few of those things. And I played with him, so I've seen him do that. But it was a different era. And now everywhere we go, of course, we see a lot of 30 jerseys. We see a lot of 35 jerseys for Kevin Durant. But that Curry effect and doing that things with the ball, it's really something to behold. And there's no better standard to measure yourself than Curry, on the court or off, by the way.
Jim, I'm sure that tonight Andrew Bogut will receive a lovely ovation from the Oracle crowd. What do you think? What kind of ovation are you giving him in the short amount of minutes he's played so far?
He may get a standing ovation. I'll tell you what, it's just him coming back and, you know, won a championship here. He was part of that team that was 73-9 in 2016. You know, people know his strengths. These are educated fans here, especially over the last 4 or 5 years, and they know his strength, and it's nice to have a little security there with Cousins and Andrew Bogut. And, you know, he's a likable guy anyway. He plays the game the right way. He knows his strengths. He knows his liabilities. He knows he's not going to shoot from the outside. He and Cousins are very different, but they bring a big presence to take care of big people. So I think it's going to be exciting to have. I'm really glad. It made me smile anyway. It's something different than look forward to. When he came into San Antonio the other night and I saw him at dinner, I had to say a couple of words with him. And it's fun to have him around, and you know what to expect from him. You know what to expect. And he, by the way, he is trim and he's in shape.
Yeah, he looks skinny. Thin face. Yeah, he looks really, really good. Jim, you look really good whenever we see you, man. Thank you so much. Can't pinch an inch on you either.
Hey, I appreciate being on your show. We'll just see how it all goes. But as I say, we have no idea who's going to finish 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th. They could all just go. What a turmoil it is. It's kind of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Luckily, you're there to talk us through it. Thank you so much to Jim Barnett. Always great to have him here on 95.7 The Game. The guy is legendary. By the way, speaking of legendary, Rich Aurelia, he has sipped from the cup of legendary. Rich Aurelia is going to be joining us at 4:30, courtesy of Fremont Bank, full-service banking and no compromises. Right now, though, Gianna Franco, who is not sponsored by anyone, she doesn't need to be, she works here.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Rich Aurelia joining us in just a moment here on 95.7 The Game. The us is, of course, Gianna Franco. Matt Kolsky here once again on 95.7 The Game, hanging out in the afternoons. We saw Ichiro take his final bow. We saw the A's go 0-2 over in Japan while Ichiro was taking his final bow. We've got the NCAA tournament officially landing in the Bay Area starting tomorrow when San Jose opens up as a tournament site. Some interesting games are happening there. The old 12-5 upset certainly feels in play tomorrow in San Jose. Oregon, the 12 seed, taking on number 5, Wisconsin. And the only thing I can tell you about the 12th seeded Ducks is that's a home game. You would have thought that they were the Pac-12 champ who was a top 4 seed in this tournament to get that sort of geographical preference. That is a home game for Oregon, so we'll see if they can use that to get past Wisconsin tomorrow. We almost had a 12-5 upset in the books earlier today. Number 5, Auburn, survived a last-second air ball from New Mexico State. Kid had a good look from the corner, missed the rim, missed everything, shot it over the court, basically. New Mexico State is going home. Auburn survives by its chinny-chin-chin, 78-77. And it looks like we're going to get a 12-5 upset here if Ja Morant continues to do Ja Morant type of things. We've got Murray State leading Marquette 42-35. That is in the Hartford side of the bracket right now. But that kid can play. I think he's already got 15 assists or something like that. Or hold on, do I need to refresh this? Did that game go final?
It may just have, yes.
Murray State, 83-64. That is your final. A 12 has upset a 5. So is tradition. So it shall be.
And we get another game of one of the top 3 to 5 NBA prospects in the upcoming draft. So good for us. Plus, technically an upset when Minnesota beat Louisville. And I thought of it earlier because didn't you play a Bill Murray soundbite?
Oh, what are you kidding?
Young Cinderella. He's a Cinderella boy.
Did you notice that Bill Murray's son is a member of, I believe, the Louisville coaching staff?
Is he really? Well, uh-huh. Bill Murray's son was on Xavier's coaching staff, and Xavier's coach was
Chris
promoted
Mack
to the Louisville job. So,
and
there
so
you go.
It was both Brian Doyle and Bill in the crowd in Louisville gear.
Young Cinderella. He's a Cinderella boy.
When I was flying back from Mexico, the limited entertainment options on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to watch any of these movies. What kind of documentaries have they got? I watched a documentary,
Bill Murray stories,
about Bill Murray showing up at people's parties and like moving in and out speakers, doing dishes. It was really something else. Bill Murray officially marches to a different drummer.
One of the weirdest guys in the history of show business and almost exclusively delightful.
Yeah, really? Who doesn't like Bill Murray, right?
No idea. I don't know who that is.
It's very hard to find universal admiration. I think the world pretty much loves Bill Murray. Look, there's no doubt the world loves Ichiro Suzuki. This is a guy who, I remember, I was at ESPN back in 2001. I was working out there when Ichiro was about to crack into the major leagues. And I remember them doing segment after segment on Baseball Tonight and on ESPN Radio how no matter how good he was over there, it's just not going to translate in terms of everyday player. Well, Ichiro had a Hall of Fame career to differ with you, and he ends that today in Japan. Thunderous ovation, good send-off for a guy who doesn't spend a lot of time getting emotional. He got a little emotional, said it was a very, very important day. And looking at what it means to Major League Baseball, I think you and I both agree that this is a pivotal figure in the evolutionary step of just how the game has changed. Ichiro never opened the floodgates, though, the way that I thought he might. I'm like, who are the other Japanese, Korean, Asian, Chinese players that have really come over and taken this game by storm? No one quite like him. No one even in the neighborhood.
No. I mean, Matsui was good.
He was good, but he wasn't.
Like this.
Right. He wasn't all-star.
He was older, good, if I recall, when he came over.
Yes.
But Daisuke was supposed to be the pitching version. Didn't really pan out. There have been a handful of, like, just below all-star Korean pitchers, I feel like. What's the guy in L.A.? Kim?
Yes, Byung-hyun Kim.
No, that's the guy. He was the closer.
Oh, no,
I'm talking about the guy in L.A. right now. Can somebody help me with the Dodger? The Dodger
Kim
starting
Jin-ryu,
pitcher.
Ryu.
Yeah, there's been a handful. Yu Darvish came over a couple good years, but now he has sort of fallen off a little bit.
Hurt.
to find somebody from Asia in particular who came over and put together a 10-year stretch of just really good baseball, never mind Hall of Fame baseball, it's tough.
Well, we're about to bring Rich Aurelia aboard to talk about what's going on with the Giants down in Scottsdale and what happened over in Japan with his former teammate, Ichiro Suzuki, who once again in Oakland did this in front of my own two eyes, and it's still one of the most amazing things I've ever seen happen on a baseball field. R.I.P. Terrence Long.
Ground ball, base hit in the right field. Heading for third is Terrence Long. The throw by Ichiro. Beautiful. Peggy got him. Holy smoke, a laser beam strike from Ichiro to the third baseman, David Bell, and Terrence Long is gunned down at third base. What a throw. Two outs.
He throws a laser low to the ground about 6 feet off. Is that a strike? If you can call that as an umpire, that's right down the middle strike, baby.
It's one of the great throws I've ever seen with my own two eyes. Ichiro gunning out Terrence Long. Everybody's sharing some Ichiro memories today, and I thought we'd bring in a guest here on 95.7 The Game who actually played with Ichiro Suzuki. Rich Aurelia joins us. Of course, we know him with the San Francisco Giants, but he had his cup of coffee with the Seattle Mariners as well. And, Rich, it's, one, good to talk to you. Always a pleasure to have you on. We got Matt Kolsky along here today, so thanks for joining us. He hit it. He hit 372 the year that you were with Ichiro up in Seattle. So you were around him when he was at the peak of his powers. What was that like, man?
Well, I mean, you know, it was 2004. I was only there for the first 3 months of the season. I also think that was the year he had 262 hits. But what I remember was, I remember that spring they talked of moving him like out of a leadoff spot and maybe to a third spot in the order. And, you know, it didn't quite go too well in the month of April. I think he was hitting like 250 by the end of the month. But then he got to right around the All-Star break, and I think he had like a couple 50-hit months, which is pretty much unheard of. But this guy was not only a great, you know, hitter with control of his, you know, the plane of his bat and where he wanted to hit the ball, but he was a very, very intelligent hitter. And I remember we'd play Anaheim, and he would purposely try and hit the ball at David Eckstein at shortstop because he knew he couldn't throw him out. And I think he had five infield hits in one game we played against Anaheim. I don't know if any of them went further than 100 feet. Incredible, incredible guy.
He had an incredible amount of tools in his bag. There's no doubt about it. One of my questions about Ichiro, and I've heard rumors in both ways, I've heard facts in both directions. How much English did he really know? I know that he always had a translator to deal with the media, but I heard that he would talk in clubhouses and was a riot at times.
Oh, he was hilarious. He knew a lot more English than I think people thought, and he was really big into like slang stuff, like American slang. So if he heard something, you know, for the first time, he'd always ask like, "Hey, what does that mean?" And you tell him, and then he'd use it the rest of the season, like at the appropriate time. But I will say this: he was a great teammate, a great player, and in my mind, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer for what he did. And the amount of time he came over here and the way he started his career off, definite first ballot Hall of Famer for me.
And you sort of mentioned it there, just the fact that there was once consideration of moving him to the three hole, and people always used to say, look at the show he puts on in batting practice. And if he wanted to, he could have been a 35-plus homer guy, but, you know, would have been hitting 270. Do you believe that?
I believe he could have been a 30-homer guy and still hit around 290. But, you know, he was a guy that knew his game really well. And his game was getting on base, using his speed. And, you know, he would surprise every once in a while. He would, you know, he'd jump on you like first pitch of the game or something and hit one 20 rows deep. But, you know, he would do a lot of that in batting practice. Everybody would egg him on to hit balls, and he would in Seattle, he hit balls off of that glass facade in right field all the time. But, you know, it's funny, we talk about his hitting, and nobody's even really, I mean, Damon mentioned it on the intro, but, like, his defense was next to none either. I mean, he was an unbelievable defender with a great arm. And,
you know, I look at the guys that I played with in my career on my team, and guys like Griffey and Bonds, Ichiro's definitely up there with that caliber player that I've played with.
You know, you shared, we're talking with Rich Aurelia. Richie, you shared, you know, some space in clubhouses with some of the all-time greats, and you know just the kind of weight that players of that ilk carry with them. I said, you know, Barry Bonds changed whatever room he walked into, whether he was in a good mood or not. Like, that's how much attention Barry Bonds commands. Yep. Was it like that with Ichiro, and beyond Ichiro, with the throng of Japanese media that would follow him around? Did that feel like it affected the clubhouse you were in?
Oh, it definitely did. You know, we had, I mean, tons of Japanese media anywhere we went, whether it was at home in Seattle or on the road somewhere. But, you know, the way Ichiro affected a room or a clubhouse, I think it was more like a level of, like, respect, because I know he respected the game and he respected the American game. And I think for him, the idea of, I'm not going to be considered one of the best players ever until I do it in the United States and do it at the level he did. So I think it was more a level of a respect that you had when he walked in the room, because he did go about his business very professionally. And on the flip side of that, he was also a great guy to talk to and had a great personality, you know, where you go on that flip side and, you know, like you said, Barry, whether he was in a good mood or a bad mood, he was going to affect it one way or the other. And Junior Griff was just always, you know, a shining light in that clubhouse in Cincinnati when I played there. But, you know, I just think, you know, for me personally, it was an honor to just say I played with those three guys.
So talking about those big names of old, and obviously the big names of now, all seem to be cashing in big time right now. And one thing we've talked about a lot, and I'm kind of curious about, after the two big free agents this offseason, Machado and Harper, almost all of the sort of next free agents up are now extended over long periods of time with their current teams, and it makes you wonder who that next big free agent will end up being, or if that's really even going to be the paradigm in baseball anymore. And I'm wondering if you see this as a change in the way things are done. Is it possible Machado and Harper are kind of the last two really big free agents?
Well, yeah, I don't know. The game's changing in a sense, I think, that teams are trying to pay their younger players less and buy out some of their, you know, arbitration years and free agent years, which is fine. We've seen teams do that for a long time. I think what we're seeing now is, one, you'd have to assume a lot of these big revenues are up for teams, or they wouldn't be paying this kind of money, whether they're getting money from local TV revenues or wherever they're getting it from. But it seems to me the way it's trending is, you know, a lot of teams may have one or two really high-priced players, and then the trend seems to be now teams are going with younger guys that are more versatile, that can maybe play multiple positions and, you know, almost get like, you know, a two-for-one deal where if I got a guy that could play, you know, second base and left field and pay him this much, well, then I got a guy that, you know, I could float around and mix and match with lineups. I mean, the amount of money that these guys, I mean, it didn't surprise me. I'll say that. But, you know, there's something to be said for what Mike Trout did. You know, maybe there's a sense of loyalty there where he wants to stay there his whole career and try and win a championship there. So I do respect that from him. And a guy like, you know, I thought the next big guy would be Nolan Arenado, because in my mind, I think he's the best third baseman in baseball on both sides of the ball. But, you know, he got locked up from Colorado. So it remains to be seen who the next huge one's going to be. But, you know, that you'll see somebody sign for big money. But, you know, it's hard to build a team around that sometimes when you're spending so much on one guy.
Rich Aurelia here on 95.7 The Game. And it is. It's like an NBA model where they're playing as, you know, they want a superstar and they want rookies or minimums around that. And that's just, you know, like I was saying, Mike Trout could go 4-for-4 and hit 1,000 this year with 200 home runs, and you could make the argument that the Angels could still have a losing season. One guy doesn't change the formula that much, and I wonder if baseball is actually laying the groundwork to its next labor strife. And I mean, there is no more major league middle class here, Rich.
No, there isn't, and I think that's going to be a huge topic with the next collective bargaining agreement. You know, we've seen it where, I mean, guys like Dallas Keuchel are still out there who won a Cy Young a couple years ago. And Craig Kimbrell's out there who's probably going to be a Hall of Famer at the end of his career at some point. Those guys are still out there. And not to say they're old, but, you know, they've got some time under their belt. They're probably close to 30. And that seems to be the player, you know, 30 to 34, that's kind of getting flushed out right now. I kind of get why it's happening, but at the same time, I don't know if it's good for baseball because I think it takes a lot. It makes a bigger separation between the have and the have-nots, because if you realistically look at this year in baseball, there's probably 8 or 9 teams that you can say, yeah, they're going to go to postseason, and everybody else could be pretty much an afterthought.
Yeah, very comfortable with being an afterthought. Is there retooling, rebuilding, and it is. I heard somebody describe this as the post-competitive era, which if you thought steroid era sounded bad, dude, post-competitive era is the worst era I've ever heard of in any sport ever. Richie, did you make it down to Scottsdale at all? Did you put your eyes in the Giants clubhouse? Spend any time with the boys this summer or this spring?
I did. I was down there for a week as the guest instructor.
Yeah.
So I spent about 6 days in the clubhouse and in the dugout during the games. And, it seems to be a nice, loose group this year again. There's some guys that look a lot, better than they did last year. And, Joe Panik looks like he's in great shape this year. He looks ready to go. Evan Longoria looks a lot better at the plate and in the field. And Jeff Samardzija looks pretty good on the mound. I know he's throwing today, and I haven't looked to see what he's doing yet. But from what I saw, he seems healthy, and he seems ready to go this year. So I guess my prediction this year is the same as it's been the last couple of years. If every one of these guys do just their average and what they're capable of and they stay healthy, they have a chance to contend for a playoff spot or a wild card spot. But if something, doesn't quite go the right way, well, then, it could look like last year or the year before.
And not a lot of room for error.
It's a big question.
A lot of people talk about this team as it regards hitting the ball out of the ballpark in a very specific way, and it almost always involves the ballpark specifically. And so I think you're the perfect guy to ask. As someone who hit 37 home runs as part of a team playing in that ballpark, was around guys who were hitting at that level of power in that ballpark, do you buy that as an excuse? And is it fair to believe that perhaps some power hitters wouldn't want to come here? Or do you say, hey, man, if you're a real power hitter, come hit it out of here anyway?
Well, one, I would say that definitely it contributes to power guys not coming to play here. It has to. I mean, you hit a ball 400 feet to, right center field and it's an out. But at the same time, I don't buy it as an excuse. I say it's a contributing factor to the lack of home runs that team hits. But that being said, I played on teams there where we had, 3, 4, 5 guys hit 20 home runs in that ballpark. And granted, you take Bonds out of the equation. When you have somebody with power like his, they're going to hit him wherever. But, you got guys like Kent and myself and JT Snow and Ellis Burks and, I think David Bell hit 15 or 16 one year. It's not an excuse, but it's a contributing factor. And I think that the way the game is so changed now with these analytics and launch angles and this, I think the game has become a game of strikeouts and a game of home runs where everybody's trying to leave the park. And I think a lot of nuances of Major League Baseball just are not there anymore. And it's not the same strategic game, especially in the National League, that it once was.
Richie, we love you. You're such a good guy. You're a people person. You're always easy to talk to. They're handing out 12-year deals and $400 million contracts. You officially retired a few years too early, Richie. I mean, come on. Rich Aurelia hitting free agency off of 37 home runs. What's that? That's like a $250 million conversation right now, Richie.
If I could rewind about 18 years, that'd be awesome. But the body just doesn't do it anymore at 47, man.
Well, I tell you what, you still look good, Richie. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, man. You're the best.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Rich Aurelia here on 95.7 The Game. You know, Matt, the question that you asked Rich about that led to us talking about the declining middle class and guys getting deals before they really you'd think would get them an extension. Paul Goldschmidt today. Paul Goldschmidt hasn't even had an at-bat in the regular season for the Cardinals. Signs a huge extension today. You talk about where the next free agent comes from. I'll tell you, it comes from a team that can't afford. It's going to come from Oakland. The next free agent is going to come from Oakland or Tampa Bay or teams that just have an ownership group that's not willing to pay major league prices for major league talent. So free agency is now going to be born not out of players seeking more money. It's going to be born out of team pettiness, cheapness, I think.
As an East Bay resident, let it be Tampa or Kansas City, please.
Yeah.
Let Oakland live, man. Let Oakland live.
That would be great. They have plenty of money to spend on this team if they want to.
That's right.
One of the richest men in the world owns them.
Mm-hmm.
John Fisher, let them live. When we come back, we got a little 5 before 5 for you. You're going to like this. Gianna Franco takes over with 5 topics that are on her mind that are in the pages and the headlines. And that's coming up next here on 95.7 The Game.
Some things you need to know. Some things you want to know. It's 5 before 5 on 95.7 The Game.
Oh, headlines, deadlines, and stories that slipped through the cracks, picked up by the one and only Gianna Franco and served to us lovingly here on 95.7 The Game. How are you, Gianna? I see you're working on a nice little plate of nachos over there.
Yeah, thank you, Vonta Hill, for bringing that in.
Studio nachos.
No complaints. I'm happy to share with all of you as well. Hey, we're brought to you by the California Academy of Sciences. CalAcademy.org is the website. Check it out. Dino Days here. And who doesn't love dinosaurs, right?
I love dinosaurs. There's no
age, me. I love dinosaurs.
There's no age limit on loving dinosaurs. I'll even take it a step further. Some of my favorite Transformers were the Dinobots.
Oh, of course.
Nice.
Of course.
Number one.
All right, how about this? Who doesn't love a good nickname? Well, apparently, this morning or yesterday morning, Joel Embiid was a guest on the latest episode of Steph Curry's YouTube series called 5 Minutes from Home. The 76ers played the Warriors at Oracle back in January. The night before, though, both of them took a ride together. They went out to dinner at Aisha's restaurant, of course, International Smoke. And shortly before they got out of the car, Curry brought up Embiid's nickname, which is, quote, the process. I'm going to play it for you as soon as my little soundboard works. Aha.
Work, soundboard.
Work, soundboard. Lena, you have to play it for me, Lena.
You rolling with it.
I do. I do like it, mainly because of the history of how we got here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I like it. But I've actually been thinking about, you know, creating something else, like... I'm tired of the process. I'm tired of it.
That can always be a part of who you are, but you want to have a little something, a little something fresh to roll with.
So they need a new idea. The process, man.
I got it.
Any idea? You got a nickname?
I got it.
Okay, what is it?
Trust. Because it all comes from trust the process.
Okay, I get
it. You are the process. He is now the trust that you placed in it. And look at what you got. The big trust. Like the trust fund.
Yeah.
The trust fund.
That is pretty good.
That's trust. Not bad.
I am into that. I would just say there aren't many. We spent a lot of time today talking about Ichiro and the impact he had when he came over from Japan. But just in terms of dudes that are a great time and impact everything around them positively, like Joel Embiid is a dream. He really is. He's incredible on camera. He's, if you look at his statistics, he is playing like prime Shaq right now.
He told a great story.
And
I watched this Curry 5 minutes from home. I watched it today because I thought we might ask Steph about it in an interview that we hope to have for you tomorrow or very, very soon. Unfortunately, the Warriors had to cancel Steph with us today. But I watched it, and he basically said, you know, he didn't start playing basketball until he was about 16 years old, and he came over in the, like, NBA Africa program where he was tabbed to have a shot to do this based on his physicality. And he said, you know, when I got to America, kids were making fun of me, and kids were so much better. Even though they were half the size of me, they'd been playing since they were 5 years old. You know, here I am, I'm 16, touching a basketball for the very first time. I couldn't catch it. I couldn't control it. I was allergic to it, basically. And there was a day where the guy who was the high school coach asked Embiid to leave practice for just a moment. And Embiid left practice, and he turned around to every single one of those kids, and he says, so I know you're making fun of him today in 3 years, you're going to be asking him for a loan.
Really? What a cool story.
Like, careful making fun of Joel Embiid today, because he is going to be in the NBA, and all of you are going to pretend to have been his friend, or you could really be his friend.
Yeah.
That's up to you right now. He's making that decision right now. So none of you are going to the NBA. None of you will ever be better than he will be. And you better act right now. And it was a great moment from that coach.
Very cool. I love when coaches step in for players like that.
Absolutely.
Too. Very cool. There's a lot of fun texts coming in for ideas. But we'll continue because there's so much more to get to. Number two, the Kings' newest announcer is kind of a big deal. Fox Sports West announced that Anchorman character Ron Burgundy, obviously you know who he is, right? Anyone who doesn't, the fictional broadcaster played by Will Ferrell.
Yeah, we're on board.
Right? Everyone Thank knows you. That. Okay. We'll be on call for Thursday's NHL matchup between the Kings and Sharks. It's not yet clear what capacity Burgundy will serve during the contest, but they can expect to be entertained by one of the most nationally recognized broadcast voices in American movie history. Okay. So I cannot wait to get the audio of this. We'll definitely have it for tomorrow.
Let Donskoy score, please.
Yeah,
please,
God, please.
Donskoy, get in there.
Right? It's the first thing I thought about. I was like, does he know? Is he aware?
Everyone knows.
Right?
How much can, like, what is the expiration on Ron Burgundy actually doing play-by-play?
Oh, does he get an entire period?
I mean, could you handle a period of Ron Burgundy play-by-play?
They can probably laugh at it in Los Angeles or in San Jose, but there's going to be some angry grandmother in Moose Jaw, Canada, who's just furious.
This is not taking her game serious.
Exactly. She's going to be upset.
It's kind of the thing, though, because I think recently they had Snoop Dogg. Remember that?
That was excellent.
Yeah. Snoop Dogg just had some hockey call. And so you go from Snoop to Ron Burgundy. Interesting.
Yeah. Other ideas. That would be a fun segment.
Snoop-a-loop. Bring your streak in the quad. Bring your green hat.
If it's good, which I'm sure it will be, we will have it for you tomorrow in 5 before 5. All right. So the NCAA tournament obviously underway. They made history. History was made when number 13 Vermont took on number 4 Florida State in Hartford today. So
send it in, Jerome.
Yes.
Vermont's Duncan brothers are comprised of freshman Robin, redshirt junior Everett, and redshirt senior Ernie. Now they have become the first trio of brothers to play in an NCAA tournament game together on the very same team. Pretty cool.
It's very cool.
Playing with your brothers in the NCAA tournament, that's pretty dope.
The Plumleys never managed that?
Not all together. All the Plumleys were about 3 or 4 years apart.
So only you never, two at a time.
Yeah, you never put three of them on the same roster. But that's very, very cool. I mean, we were talking yesterday, if LeBron were to stick around to have a cup of coffee with his kid, if his kid could ever reach the NBA,
cool
that'd be cool. Of course, the Griffies, we were just talking about the Mariners all damn day. Got to bring that up. Sure. You know, look at it this way. You see an awful lot of sports as family, the family shirts that teams are wearing at this tournament. Well, there's that. And then there's, if I were them, I'd write the word real, real family, like actual family.
Literal family. I don't know if this is the time to mention this, but I've always been baffled by the fact that Stanford somehow produced 2 pairs of 7-foot twins in the course of like 6 years.
Yeah. It's remarkable. The twin factory, shall we call it.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of twins, Nevada has the Martin
twins. Nevada's got the twins,
that are playing in the tournament this year, too. They got a great story, by the way. If you have a chance to look it up, you should. That single mom worked really hard and got them through school. And look at how successful these kids are. So very, very cool. Good for her. All right. I believe we're on number 4.
Blake Griffin played with his brother at Oklahoma.
Yes, Taylor.
Number 4. Yeah.
Thank you. Colin Kaepernick, Eric Reid news. Both reached a grievance settlement with the NFL last month, but they reportedly will receive less than, get this, $10 million. Now, that's according to Andrew Beaton of the Wall Street Journal. I guess the two players alleged that league-wide collusion kept them out of the NFL. Now, Reid eventually did sign with the Panthers, but Kaepernick remains unsigned. And then after more than a year in court, following all the initial filings in 2017, they reached an undisclosed settlement agreement in February. And I think when we heard that story broke, we all assumed it was going to be a very large number because we thought with Kaepernick's cause and what he would want to do with that money. Anyway, we're looking at $10 million each is what they're reporting in the Wall Street Journal. So I don't know. Is that a surprising to you guys?
Sorry,
I was surprised by it.
I think it's $10 million total.
Oh, $10 million total? Oh, really?
Yeah, not for each.
But they report, maybe so, maybe so.
So he'll only get a share of that $10 million. And I don't know, that it may be that Eric Reid gives him the whole thing other than attorney fees, because Eric Reid just signed a $20-something million contract. This is very surprising to me.
Look, I don't want to get back into it again. There's too many emotions on all sides of the story. But I look at it this way. It went from lead us to the promised land, social justice warrior, to real quick, secure the bag. That's all that matters. Like, forget about making any points about NFL collusion or really anything about police brutality. Just secure the bag, Colin. And everyone thought he walked away with gobs of millions of dollars, and now we're learning it could be much, much less than that. So what happens if he doesn't secure the bag? I mean, like, I to me, it's an inglorious ending to a story that could have finished gloriously, but Colin took the easy way out on this one, man. He did. And I really thought that the Nike money that he received to do the Nike campaign that was so well received was going to be the financial wherewithal to get him through the NFL lawsuit, which I thought he was going to take all the way to the bank. Like, let's really make this league uncomfortable. And, you know, it looks like he was bought out for a price that doesn't come with sticker shock. And that's disappointing.
I think this is a time, and there have been a few of these times over the course of this entire long, drawn-out period. And I have a more charitable view of Kaepernick, I think, slightly than you, perhaps. But I think, undoubtedly, this is one of several times, and so far he has not taken the opportunity, that it would be very helpful to him to step out and explain his thought process. I assume there is one. I do think he's a pretty thoughtful guy. I think the one thing he does not deserve criticism for is he has stayed committed to fighting police brutality, particularly against people of color. He continues to donate money to causes. He continues to speak out about those things at events all over the country. But I would like to understand his thought process here. That's what I would like.
Yeah, I'd like a little clarity on the entirety of it too. But he doesn't. The thing is, when you don't speak for yourself, others do your talking for you.
Yeah,
and I think that is a trap that Colin's entire crusade fell into.
Very hard. The reported figure apparently wouldn't even cover Cap's losses for not being under NFL contracts for the past 2 years. So interesting stuff. All right, let's get to the last one here. Number five. Guys, this is hard hitting news right now, so be prepared. Panthers QB Cam Newton was a guest on The Late Show with James Corden last night. He revealed that he challenges himself to give something up every single month. So in January.
So it's always the month of Lent.
Yeah.
and the Newton household.
Yeah, pretty much. January, he gave up making bets. All right. February, he gave up meat and went vegan. And for March, he stepped things up and decided to give up the big O. Well, just take
pound
a listen.
Pound it.
March, I'm giving, I hope this is an adult crowd. It looked like it is. No, sure. Climax.
Shut the front door.
Straight up.
No.
Oh, my God. I'm gone.
They should at least done it in February. You got 28 days in February.
I wanted it to be challenging. You know, I'm coming off of shoulder surgery. I'm looking for...
Oh, I get it. Shoulder surgery. It's harder to... I hear.
So that's actor David Boreanaz with the joke about why didn't you pick that in February. So, yeah.
Wait, that was Angel who said that?
That was Angel who said that.
Love
yeah,
it.
The guy from Bones
Love
as well.
It.
Could you do it one whole month?
Send it in, Jerome!
No, you couldn't.
Can I tell a related...
I could do anything I set my mind to, but why would I set my mind to that?
Can I tell a related story?
Yes, please
It's
do.
Radio friendly.
Good.
I had a friend who, during high school, at summer camp, attempted to keep a very similar pact as, like, a show of goodness knows what to his girlfriend at the time. And I just have to tell you, it was a terrible idea. He became a very unpleasant person after a very short number of days. And then the remainder of the month was just everyone being like, will you just get out of here until you take care of yourself so you stop being such a freak?
It's like the contest episode.
Yeah, don't do this. This
You're
is
all
a
backed
bad
up.
Idea.
You're all backed up.
You can't get all backed up. It's not good for you. No matter who you are, any gender, like, make yourself feel comfortable and happy as often as you can, conceivably.
But how do we know he's not going to cheat?
Well, here's the thing. Where are the police to make sure that this happens? I mean, how do we officially adjudicate whether or not this happened?
Adjudicate, even as a word, was dangerous for me there, I have to
thank
say.
Thank you very much. All I can say is it's going to be a really interesting April Fool's Day in the Newton household.
Send it in, Jerome!
Welcome to your 5 o'clock hour.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.